Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
All right, are you all ready to go? I just need a 10-second countdown and we can get started.
All right, yeah, the first time I called in, it didn't connect and I got worried, but 10-second
Yeah,
ten
sometimes
second
it's a Monday that
great.
Can... Yeah, that's why I edit my audio and all that, so we'll just have quiet for 5 seconds and then we'll get us started.
Right.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Healthcare Consultants Podcast, brought to you by the... I'm going to strike that and start that over. Good afternoon, and welcome to the Healthcare Consultants Podcast, brought to you by the Chicago Health Law and Professional Licensing Firm of Michael V. Favia and Associates. This is your host, Nick Augustine, and today our guest is Barbara Ellis Rasek. She's a Senior Vice President of Corporate Real Estate Solutions in Chicago. In this episode of the Healthcare Consultants, Barbara explains various issues that affect healthcare practitioners in the Chicago area real estate market. Let's say good morning to Barbara Ellis Rasek.
Good morning, and thank you for inviting me.
Well, Barbara, thank you for taking your time on this Monday morning to talk about important things with real estate, especially in light of the country moving forward with both feet on the ground. We're looking at different healthcare professionals that we can help. We're going to talk about different needs they have and relocation clauses, renting and buying, net leases versus gross leases, all sorts of good details that really beat the drum of why we need specific industry professionals like yourself.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
All right. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and why healthcare is the niche that you are in real estate?
Well, I actually fell into the healthcare niche accidentally. There was a consulting firm that just couldn't locate a commercial real estate broker who was sensitive to the needs that their dental clients had. So my original entry was into the dental field. I had gone from a very large firm to a smaller firm and decided that specialization is important when you go to a smaller firm. I discovered I liked working with the healthcare professionals, and from dental expanded my skills to what I describe as the entrepreneurial ends of healthcare, which include dental, optometrics, physical therapy, pain management, chiropractics, pediatrics, and OB-GYN. And I've been in the real estate business over 25 years, specializing or having a large healthcare vertical for the past 15.
Wow. So you've seen a lot of changes in that time, especially with trends and behavior patterns with people. I know that we talked a little before the program about retail spaces people want to be in and other different things that just, it's really just important to adapt to changing times and changing climates and where people are and how they want to use these services. So when getting involved in different healthcare practices, can you tell people a little bit about why healthcare practices, you know, dental, for example, versus another, may be so different and their needs are different from other, even, you know, from lawyers' offices or this and that. So if I'm a dentist looking for an office and someone has a law office that used to be there, is that something that matches for me or not? I mean, so what are the things to look at when approaching these things? Because I feel that there are probably a lot of healthcare practitioners out there who don't even realize that they should be looking for an industry-specific realtor such as yourself?
It's very important, Nick, because a medical build-out is traditionally a higher cost item than a traditional office build-out. That's number one. For example, in dental in particular, dental is probably the most expensive build-out per square foot because it's got the most plumbing and the most offices packed into a small amount of space. The ideal space for a general dentist is between 1,700 and 1,900 square feet, and they're going to pack a lot into that space. So working with someone who understands how to build those spaces out is very important. Also, if you have more space than you need and you can't put an operatory into that space, filling the operatory with patients is really how a dentist, for example, makes money. Filling exam rooms with patients to the best of your capacity with your time as a doctor is how you build a profitable practice.
So I had no idea that all that plumbing was needed. So right there, my first thing that I thought in my head was, all right, what if I find a space that has a good location, a good space, but it was occupied by someone else and doesn't have all that plumbing? Do we rehab that existing space, or do we look at something and do a fresh build-out? There's a lot to look at there.
The answer is it depends. It's possible to demolish a space. The issue that you have is if someone's built out the space and still thinks there's value in the improvements that you need to take out, that's an issue. So if a client's looking at a space that's been built out for another use, if they have to rework more than, say, 20 to 50% of that space, then they often are better off passing on an option that's partially built out and looking at an opportunity where they can start from scratch.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm thinking also in the back of my mind in a conversation looking at different options like that with space, whether to move on or whether to work on redoing something. I'm thinking about money and the money people in the background, and I'm guessing that there are financial people, and I suppose we probably had them on this program on Healthcare Consultants Podcast for specific healthcare needs in financing some of these build-outs, because most of them, correct me if I'm wrong, are for very long-term deals. These are not things that people jump into lightly for a few years.
That's true. If you're spending anywhere. A medical build-out with exam rooms and a lab and a sink in every office or every exam room is generally going to run at least $80 a square foot to build out. In the current market with supply chain issues, it may be even higher. A dental office may cost you $150 to $175 a square foot just to build out your interiors. My guideline is if someone's going to lease space, I want them to be able to control it for 20 years, usually through a 10-year lease and 2 5-year options to renew, just so that they can get the best use they can out of their initial investment.
Mm-hmm. Now, I suppose also another thing that may be happening right now, as we're coming out of COVID and resuming, close to normal real estate practices, there are so many spaces, depending on where you are, where I know law firms, for example, have taken another look at how they use their spaces and how many people need to be in those offices on the daily basis. I think there may be more open spaces and different options than there might have before. So just a general rule, how has the pandemic affected real estate where it applies to healthcare?
Medical tenants have become considered very good opportunities for retail locations. There's been a trend called the retailization of healthcare, and there were two ideas in it. One is with changes in retail, having functions that bring people regularly to a shopping center or a mall are considered a very positive addition to that mall. second, there's really been a push to make sure that services are available, healthcare services are available near where your patients live. I actually use principles of site selection that are often used in retail store location to help my medical clients and my dental clients find spaces that are close to the either the patient base they have or the patient base that they would like to develop.
That's great, especially now. I know that when people are making more of their gallon of gas, especially with prices how they are now, it's combining trips. And if you are already going to one place and it's on your route to stop at your dental office, it makes a lot of sense why the retail spaces are so well suited. Let's talk a little bit about relocation clauses and negotiating them. What are some issues there that our healthcare practitioners should know about?
Many healthcare practitioners do not realize that in almost every standard lease, a landlord will include a clause that's called a relocation clause. And that gives the landlord the ability to relocate the tenant on a really relatively short notice, sometimes as short as 30 days, sometimes as short as 60 days, to move the tenant to another location in the building. And this happens in office leases or retail leases. Well, if you picked the site specifically because you had visibility, the parking was good outside, you may not want to be relocated to another space. In addition, if you have spent $150 a square foot, $100 to $150 a square foot on your build out, you certainly don't want to spend those dollars again moving at a time that you didn't choose to move. So I try to get the landlord to, my first position is that the landlord removes the relocation clause altogether so that my client knows that they can stay in that location for any initial lease term and any lease renewal. And if I can't get that, then we make it rather costly for the landlord to relocate the tenant, so there's less likelihood they'll do it. For example, they have to give notice. They have to recreate everything that was in the space that the doctor occupied previously. They have to pay for the cost of moving all the technology, recreating the signage, different things to protect that tenant.
I've already, as you were talking, I've already retained a team of lawyers to say, no, I'm not moving my dental space. Honestly, the relocating and moving, I'm going to speak from my own personal experience as a law firm marketing professional. One of the worst things, you know, and not just law firm marketing, any professional services marketing, one of the worst things you can do for your SEO and your marketing is to change locations. Now, it can also be one of the best things you do if you have an exciting and new location. However, when you change things, Google doesn't know where you are anymore. We have a whole trail of websites. I mean, if you look, you know, people who've moved around too much, now you've got people going to old locations, you know, sending things to wrong addresses, and Google being concerned as to where we're even located. It is a nightmare. It's almost as awful as changing your website too many times. When everyone was able to get, you know, .law or .dental or .ortho or whatever ., you know, maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, it was very fashionable to do that. Now you've got the internet full of all these different domains, and it can be just confusing enough. With all of the competition out there, the best way to stay and grow a strong practice, in my personal opinion, is to pick a good location and stay there and don't make substantial changes, because people are not going to remember and you're not their top priority in life. So stay where you are. And so I can see why that relocation clause is absolutely essential. Do you ever get problems with negotiating those where people just say nope and then you go to another option or plan? Do lawyers get involved? I mean, how hairy does that stuff get?
I like to negotiate that some initial terms in that provision in the letter of intent phase before the lawyers get involved. And then we fine-tune the language with the attorneys in the lease review.
Mm-hmm. When you use attorneys in lease reviews, I think sometimes that may freak people out a little bit. Why is their attorneys getting involved? But it's really important to do that so that you don't have to use them later on the litigation side, much better on the transactional side. Am I right?
Well, here's how I describe it, because occasionally a client has said to me, but I love my landlord. My landlord's great. And I tell them, they're great, but if they sell the building, the only document that protects you is the lease document that you signed, because the new owner is going to reference that document with anything that has to do with your landlord-tenant relationship.
Well, and also, what if your new landlord is not just an individual you could just call or talk to? It's an investment company with representatives, and trying to get anything, you have to wait for the next time they have a meeting. I mean, there's layers of difficulty that you could spray on just about anything. When, you know, the more money, the more at stake, the more complex things get. I can imagine there are people who, you know, don't jump into the best first deal that you think you have, because you could have serious buyer's remorse, because, you know, you never know when the really good deal has a hitch attached to it, like a relocation issue.
Correct, correct. Reviewing, having a lease document that protects your various interests is absolutely critical in
absolutely.
A leasing situation for a medical practice.
So I suppose that may be how you are acquainted with our friend Michael V. Fabio, sponsor of this program, and all his groups.
That is correct. And Michael and I have worked together with clients on real estate, both on leases and on building purchases. And he is excellent at protecting the interests of the client in those situations.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also very nice that he's got a very strong group of connected collateral healthcare professionals. I know before the program I mentioned my friend Bruce Johnston, and you said, "Oh yeah, I know him as well." And you know, they're there with the architecture for the new builds. So many different professionals come in. So I always want to remind people that when you're working with someone like yourself, that you know all these other people that are involved in the sphere of everything that affects them too. So another reason that it's so helpful to develop relations with industry-specific professionals. So let's move on to another question about renting versus buying. I know you talked a lot about leasing spaces for long-term, and I suppose, like anything else, there may be that question of, am I better off renting the space or buying the space and building some equity? What are some of the things to consider there?
The answer to that question is it depends. A couple of pointers that I like to give my clients if they're going to consider a building purchase is that they also think about, while they're going to locate their medical or dental office there, that they think about if, at some point on the exit strategy, can I sell it to a non-medical user as well? The building will be more tradable and more easy to sell if you have a site that could work for more than one purpose. One thing that I warn is make sure you have enough parking at your location. Sometimes parking requirements in different municipalities change. It's very hard to sell a building that doesn't have enough parking. So that is something that I like to emphasize. The process of purchasing takes longer than the process of leasing. So often if I have a startup firm, if they're really looking to become operational sooner, I can get them up and operating and into a space with a lease sooner than I can with a building purchase. There are issues where I always call the municipality and ask about two things at the same time. One, does the zoning allow a medical use? And two, does the parking allow a medical use? And people don't realize that you need the right answer from the municipality on both of those questions. The answer has to be yes to proceed. you want to avoid situations where you're looking at a piece of property or a building that needs what's called a special use permit, which means you need to go through zoning with the municipality to change the zoning in some way or to get a special use permit to allow your use in that space. That process alone could add 3 to 9 months to your schedule of buying that building and opening that office.
You know, very interesting. I'm thinking about different municipalities and where that could be an interesting strategy. If there was an area that was possibly underserved in a particular healthcare practice because of zoning, things like that, sometimes it may be worth the trouble to go through in getting that special use permit. I'm just thinking about towns that are sparsely populated or areas that there's a need and a lack. I suppose it's a case-by-case basis, obviously, but those are things to think about when you're, I suppose, a four-dimensional thought on where to put a business like that.
Well, I have found that you can get a lot of information from the local municipality, and I think one of the things that may separate me from other people who do what I do is my comfort level in being able to reach out to local officials. In the city of Chicago, it's the aldermen. In the suburbs of Chicago, it's the municipality itself. Some are big and they have the planning departments. Some are small and simply have a community manager. But it always makes sense to get the municipality on your side.
Well, right, and know what their terms are, you know, and they may be under a period where they're trying to grow certain areas, and they're, you know, especially where there are new and up and coming areas on edges of cities and areas that they're trying to redevelop, where it may look, you know, there's certain areas and neighborhoods in Chicago where when I was there for school, I might not have even considered living, and you know, fast forward 20 years, and it's a whole different ball game. And so that area on the edge of redevelopment that looks like it may be a questionable trigger to pull now, you know, you could be setting yourself up for, you know, really good gains in the future, and isn't that the whole reason that we're in business?
You bring up a very good point, and I help my clients seek out neighborhoods where development is moving in that direction and that more people are moving into the area honestly, for some medical practices, you're looking for a specific demographic income level, and you can put someone in an area that you know is changing and there's new construction, and maybe families are moving in. Like if you're a pediatric dentist, you might want to move into a place where you see families coming in. And that is an important element of anticipating where the neighborhood's going to go, not just where it is today.
Sure, sure. Well, I would one of these days I will take a tour around Chicago and see how things have changed since I was last there. And when I was there several years ago, I know I was not even recognizing the skyline. So I'm sure there's a lot that's, you know,
have been a lot of cranes in the area.
Yeah, right. A lot of cranes.
A lot of new construction.
That's like what I call Austin. I call Austin, Texas, Crane City. But I know that, you know, looking at things like the near west side was, when I left, that was just, a lot of people were saying. And I'm sure that area, or the South Loop area in Printer's Row, that used to be questionable, you know, where, you know, you'd go through enough years and those neighborhoods develop so well. And it's interesting to be on the edge of that, you know. So in real estate, that's always trying to find out what that next great area is going to be. So
Something that's interesting about that West Loop area is the original restaurants that pioneered Restaurant Row are being priced out of the neighborhood they helped develop.
Wasn't that the whole reason that neighborhood grew? Because of the restaurants. That was the draw.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, and so now there's nowhere to, and well, I guess everyone just has everything delivered from Uber Eats anyway.
No. There are restaurants. They're just paying so much more in rent that some of the edgy restaurants that went in first are having to look at different locations.
Oh, they're needing to move. Very interesting. Interesting. All right, so let's to round out, let's talk about the difference between net leases and gross leases. What do we need to know about that?
Nick, it's a question that I get asked all the time. What is the difference between a net lease and a gross lease? And the biggest difference is in a net lease, the landlord will charge you separately for all of your taxes, operating expenses, common area maintenance. In a gross lease, or the way most landlords identify it, a modified gross lease, the bulk of those initial taxes, expenses, common area maintenance, insurance are included in that number. However, my medical clients are not aware that as those costs increase, the landlord has capped their exposure and will still pass through additional costs to you, whether it's a net lease or a modified gross lease. So the risk of increasing expenses is on you, the tenant. So always keep that in mind. And make sure when you're talking to a landlord, you know if it's a net lease or a gross lease. For example, if your net rent is $20 a square foot and it costs $10 a square foot to operate the building, you need to know your rent is really $30 a square foot.
So this is similar to having our, you know, in a residential situation, having our taxes and everything rolled into a monthly payment versus
That's
having
correct.
Those things separated. So it could go either way. It just depends on the situation, I suppose.
You need to have a professional who knows how to analyze those numbers and forecast for you what your actual costs will be. And your occupancy cost has to include your net rent and all of your taxes and your operating expenses.
Yeah.
The parallel on a purchase is it's not just the price of the building, it's the price of the construction as well that you need to perform to make that building work for you. So if a building is a very low cost, it probably needs more work than a building that's in better condition. So you want your total project cost, adding those two numbers together to understand what it is that you're taking on. And then you have to go back and make sure that your practice can generate the cash flow to support the project you have in mind and the cost structures you have in mind.
Right, right. Now, I'm assuming that while getting into our practice and building and having the long-term lease or purchase puts us in a good space, but life is full of ups and downs and we never know, and there's so much now in the world of purchasing and selling different healthcare practices, including dental and dental service organizations wanting to buy. If something happens and we win the lottery, let's make it a positive. We win the lottery and we're sick of working and we want to go to a beach somewhere and we want to sell and get out of this thing. So I suppose that exit strategies are just as important in negotiating, purchasing, and, you know, leasing agreements.
Yes, that's true. And when I can, I try to modify the assignment and sublet language to allow, one, the landlord to not easily withhold consent or not unreasonably withhold consent on the assignment to a new practice. And number two, I try very hard to make sure that the selling dentist can be released from liability on the lease document should they sell the practice.
Always be prepared for the inevitable. And in life, we get thrown curveballs. And when we need to make sure we're protected, we use the right professionals like Barbara here to help us make sure we are safe, sound, and secure, and can grow our practices and do what we need to do. So, Barbara, I want to thank you for your time today and explaining some of these really important issues and sharing with people that there are folks like yourself and Mike Fabia out there to handle and answer and then know all the unknown unknowns that are going to pop up in these areas. So thank you so much.
Thank you. A pleasure speaking with you.
For anyone who wants to get a hold of you and continue the conversation and talk about their different options, what are their next steps?
They can reach out to me at Corporate Real Estate Solutions. Probably the fastest way to reach me is my email, bellisracek@crestcorp.com, or at 312-444-9009. And I'm happy to always take a phone call and consult with someone with no financial obligation.
Well, and it's such a good it's just so important to let people know that there's people out there who specifically do this area, and so educating your consumers is so important. So I urge everyone to call Barbara and find out what they need to know. And Barbara, I want to thank you for your time again, and we look forward to having you on again on the program as there are new developments and things we need to share with folks.
Thank you so much, Nick. I'd love to come back at your convenience.
All right. Well, thank you for all who listen to these programs as well. And when you do find these on social media or a newsletter or wherever you may find these, please share them with others because you just never know who's looking for exactly this type of information. Thank you again to all who listen to the Healthcare Consultants Podcast, brought to you by the Michael V. Fabia and Associates Law Firm with offices in Chicago and Rolling Meadows. Thank you all and have a great day.